Strange Wills. Stories of strange wills made by strange people, starring the distinguished Hollywood actor Warren William, and featuring Perry Ward, Loreen Tuttle, and an all-star Hollywood cast, and the original music of Del Castillo. I devise and bequeath to my heirs the seven deadly sins: anger, jealousy, revenge, lust, envy, hate, and despair. And here is our distinguished star of radio, screen, and stage, Warren William.
Of all the sins that live in the human heart, none is so deadly as despair. It has been truly spoken that when a man loses faith in his friends, his neighbors, and himself, he is truly in a sorry plight. Harry McNeil, the Prince of Broadway, on a certain night not long ago, learned the full bitter meaning of the sin of black despair. I'll tell you the story in just a moment, after we hear a word from your announcer.
Now back to Warren William as John Francis O'Connell in The Prince of Broadway.
These are stories of strange wills made by strange people. Strange people whose last written chapter in the book of life is dominated by good or evil. The Prince of Broadway is the story of my friend Harry McNeil, actor's agent. But Harry was more than just an actor's agent. He had that uncanny genius of seeing talent where others couldn't. And once he took some talented youngster under his wing, he never stopped until his goal was reached. For 10 years, he discovered and promoted new talent for his company, Artists Incorporated, and sent a steady stream of actors, singers, and dancers to successful careers and fame. And then, one day, he grew tired and quit his job. After an extended vacation in Bermuda, he came back to New York and opened a very small office in the heart of Tin Pan Alley. The very first chance I had, I dropped in at his new address to wish him success in his new venture.
Here's my friend, the old mouthpiece in person. Do me a favor and park the tombstones outside, will you?
No tombstones with me, Harry. Just a social call and an invitation to lunch thrown in for good measure.
Well, we'll skip the lunch today, John, if we may, but come on in, let's chew the fat. And forget the dignity of the law, if that's possible.
No, it's not only possible, Harry, but a pleasure. I'll bring you up to date on Broadway gossip, but tell me, Harry, how did Artists Incorporated take your leaving?
Not very graciously, I can assure you. They even offered me a vice presidency and a trunk full of shekels to stay on, but no soap. I'm a free soul from now on. I'm going to be choosy. No more discovering budding genius. They got to have it when they come in, or else.
Or else what, Harry?
Or else I don't want them, that's all. Handle only names now, Mr. Mouthpiece. Look, see these gray hairs on my temple? That's what I got trying to put potential geniuses in marquee lights. Gray hair and ulcers at 29. If I keep it up, where do you think I'll be at 39? Well, I'll tell you. You'll be filing my will in probate court, and for all I know, adding my will to your collection of strange wills made by strange people. Oh, no, not for me.
You still give me a laugh in spite of your new resolutions. But I know you better than you think I do.
Yeah?
There's someone to see you, Harry.
Tell him to come back tomorrow. I'm busy.
I didn't say it was a him. It's a her. Guess what I mean?
Well,
Maybe it's Alice Faye or Sonia Haney.
Honey, what's her name?
Just a minute. She says her name is Pulaski, Gertrude Pulaski. She has a letter for you from her singing teacher in Oshkosh. Gosh, I'm sending her in.
Hey, wait, honey, wait.
When Gertrude Pulaski stood in the doorway, neither Harry or I could take our eyes away from her. She must have been the inspiration of Did You Ever See a Dream Walking? Luxurious ash blonde hair fell in soft ringlets around her shoulders. Her eyes were the color of a deep purple violet. Her figure would have made even the great Ziegfeld take a second look. And her provocative smile, well...
Hello.
Oh, come in, Miss Gertrude.
Thank you.
Well, Harry, if you'll excuse me, I'll be running.
Oh, no, don't go, John. It'll only take a minute or two. Gertrude, I'm Harry McNeil. This is my good friend and attorney, John Francis O'Connell.
Oh, it is a pleasure.
How do you do?
I know why you're here, Gertrude. You don't have to tell me. You want a career.
Oh, yes.
You want your name on Broadway.
Yes.
You want fame and fortune. It's no use. I don't develop talent anymore. I only take names, people who have reputations.
Oh.
I'm sorry, but...
But what, Mr. McNeil?
But what... Oh, but what will you sing, of course? You hear? Let me sit down at the piano. Now then, let's find a good number. You know this one?
Yes, of course, and I'll play it, too.
Good enough. Here, I'll move over. Room enough?
More than enough. Now you can turn the pages for me.
That would be a pleasure. Hold it, just a minute. That's enough. Look, sugar, let's relax and sing a little bit lower, will you? Now, this isn't an audition for the Met. These words were written right from some guy's heart. I want you to sing them from your heart. Here, move over and let me play it for you. Now, let's try it again. Hmm?
Yes, Mr. Martin.
Okay.
Heard of race horses kept under wraps until the day of the big race. Well, Harry McNeil went one better with the beautiful Gertrude Pulaski. 6 months went by, 6 long months that had my imagination on edge, because I couldn't wait to learn what had happened to his newest discovery. He only gave me hints. But one morning, I received an invitation in the mail to attend the debut of Judy Morrison in a song recital at Harry McNeil's penthouse apartment the following Saturday night. Oh, exit Gertrude Pulaski. Enter Judy Morrison. The debut of a McNeil discovery was always one of the highlights for blasé columnists and important bigwigs. They were seldom, if ever, disappointed. Always the showman, Harry kept Gertrude, I mean Judy Morrison, out of sight until our natural excitement and curiosity reached a crescendo. And then, at exactly 11 o'clock, she made her triumphal entry. The girl was breathtaking. She wore a long, flowing, green evening gown that accentuated the ash blondness of her hair. Her charm and smile were devastating. Her poise was perfect. In appearance and demeanor, Judy Morrison was sensational.
Well, now that you've all had a good look at Judy, she'll show you that beauty and appearance and voice are not incompatible. Judy, will you take over the keyboard, please?
I don't know why I love you like I do. I don't know why I just do. I don't know why you thrill me like you. I don't know why. Never seem to want my romancing. The only time you hold me is when we're dancing. I don't know why I love you like I do. I just do.
Well, Judy, you've seen how your friends and mine like you. Supposing you thank them in your own way.
Of course I do thank you so very much. But you and I, all of us, have this night been privileged to worship at the altar of a genius. The genius of Harry McNeil. Everything that I am, that I may one day be, I owe to him. His unselfish love, his patience, his wisdom, his... I only wish that he loved me half as much as I love him.
From that night on, the ultimate success of Judy Morrison was an accepted fact. Harry arranged for her triumphal appearance at the world-famous Rococo Room. The papers were filled with stories about her. But the day before she was to open, a storm broke. Harry called me.
Serious, John. I don't want to tell you about it over the phone, but I need a good lawyer, and quick.
I'll come over right away, Harry.
Well, when Judy came to my office that day, she had a letter for me. I forgot to ask her for it, and she forgot to give it to me. It was a letter from her singing teacher up in Oshkosh, addressed to Artists Incorporated, to my attention. You see, John, everything was wonderful until her teacher came into town to attend her opening. He went over to Artists Incorporated to thank them for what they had done, and then, bluey, they found out that Judy was their property. I'm accused of piracy. But much worse, John. They've succeeded in blackballing Judy from every top spot in the country. As long as I have her under my wing, Judy will never get a job.
I'm really sorry to hear this, Harry. Can't we make a deal with...
No, it's out of the question. They hate me for pulling out and they're after my scalp. But John, nothing must stand in the way of Judy's career. I've never told a living soul, much less Judy, but I'm in love with her. From the first day she stood in that doorway, I fell head over heels in love.
Well, why don't you tell her? After all, marriage still comes before a career in my book. How do you know that Judy will...
No, John. You see, we belong in different schools. To us, the theater is theater. It transcends everything. The show's got to go on. Judy will be everything I plan for her to be. I'll tell you how I want it worked. Draw up my will...
Well, what are you going to do? A Brody from Brooklyn Bridge?
No, not that. I want you to will Judy Morrison... body and soul to Artists Incorporated.
Harry, you're talking like a fool.
Well, if they own her, she'll go to town. She'll be where she belongs, on the top of the heap.
And you, Harry?
You know, John, I've held a pilot's license for 5 years. We're not in the war yet, but England is, and they need flyers. One more thing. I want your word that you'll never tell Judy what really happened. Tell her, yes, just say that I got tired of going on. I did everything I could for her, and from now on, she's on her own.
I never thought that I'd live to see the day that you'd run out on Judy.
You'll never know, John, how black, how bitter despair can be. If I have my way, you'll never see me alive again.
Part two of Strange Wills will follow in just a moment. Back to the Prince of Broadway and Warren Williams.
My friend Harry McDaniel disappeared from the world of men. Meanwhile, under the banner of Artist Incorporated, Judy Morrison became an overnight sensation. One night, Judy called me and asked me to meet her at the Swank Ziegler Room, where she was currently appearing. I noticed a tenseness in her voice.
John, I can't hold out any longer. I've got to know why... Harry threw me over. It wasn't like him.
Why is that important, Judy? Haven't you got what you wanted from life? Beauty, charm, talent, fame? You're the toast of Broadway.
Values in life change, John. Believe me. 9 months ago, I thought that was what I wanted. I thought that success was all that mattered. But I've changed. John, you never know what is in your heart until someone you once loved is gone. Now I know how deeply, how very deeply I loved Harry. It was because of him that I was able to reach this thing we call success. I know now that he was my inspiration. I want him, John. I want him with all my heart.
But he's gone, Judy. He joined the RAF. That's all any of us know. He's never written a line to a single one of his friends.
John, tell me honestly. Did he love me?
Well, really...
You've got to tell me. You see, if Harry loved me, I'll search the world to find him just to spit at his feet. If he didn't, if he really tired of me, if I must abandon hope, then I'm going to marry Felix George, the vice president of Artists Incorporated. He proposed to me last night. I said I'd give him my answer tonight.
If ever a man was saved with a bell, it was I. Judy was called to go on with her act, and I was left alone to ponder the question of legal ethics and love. I was sworn to silence by my client, and yet I wanted to tell Judy the truth.
I want to dedicate my next number to a very great and gallant man. His name is Harry McNeil. And I know no matter where he may be, he'd like to hear the song I'm going to sing. You see, he taught me how to sing.
When my dream boat comes home, then my dreams no more will roam. I will meet you.
See, Mr. Counselor, I've put my cards on the table. I've got a little boat of dreams that I won't let go.
Listen, Judy. I'm going to do something I shouldn't. But I'm willing to live with my conscience in spite of my actions. You're right. Harry loved you as no other human being ever will.
Oh.
He turned you over to Artists Incorporated because your singing teacher gave you a letter addressed to them. And by that letter, you belonged to them. They had you blackballed in every spot in town. And Harry did the greatest thing a real man ever did. He willingly and knowingly sacrificed his deep love for you in order that your ambition would be realized.
I knew it. I felt it all the time. Oh, John, why didn't you tell me?
I thought you wanted a career, Judy. I honestly did.
Oh, John, men are such fools. Such fools.
Judy's offer to entertain British troops was quickly and eagerly accepted. Within 2 months, she had arrived in London, and then she began her long search for Harry McNeil. Meanwhile, at home, events moved with startling rapidity. Then there came that day of infamy, December 7th, 1941. I received my commission as Captain U.S. Infantry and was assigned to legal duties in the Provost Marshal's office in London. 3 days after my arrival, I had lunch with Judy at the Savoy.
I think he's dead, John. And yet I won't be satisfied until I'm positive. He's listed as missing in action, and the squadron commander told me that he was shot down in flames off of Berlin.
Oh, don't give up, Judy. I've always believed in a sort of special providence that watches over people in love.
No, I won't give up. I'll keep right on searching if it takes me the rest of my life.
Then came D-Day. France was liberated. World-stirring events followed in rapid succession. Germany was invaded. The Battle of the Bulge. And the end was nearing. And then the news we had all been waiting for, Germany surrendered. But as the war came to its inevitable end, Judy became more disconsolate. Though she searched every hospital in Europe, no trace was ever found of a Major McNeil. He had disappeared. Judy and I met once more in Munich. I hardly recognized her when I called for her at her villa. Her eyes were sunken, she was pale and wan, and the emotional strain she'd been under these past years was indelibly etched on her face.
It's all over, John. My hopes are run out. There's nothing left for me now but to go home.
Judy, you've done everything a human being could possibly do under these conditions. You're tired, young lady. You must go back immediately.
Yes, I know. I've made arrangements to fly to London tomorrow. And then it's back to New York.
It's too bad, Judy.
Yes, John, I guess my little boat of dreams is finally founded. What time is it, please?
Why, 3:30.
Would you be a kind man and take a ride with me?
Where to?
On my last appearance. I'm scheduled to sing at a little hospital just outside of Oberammergau. I understand that most of the patients are blind.
I'm at your service, Judy. And if you will permit me to say so, I consider it an honor and a privilege.
We have only about 60 patients. They are nationals of every country in the world.
Are they all blind, Doctor?
Most of them. But we have about 20 who are psychopathic cases. We are especially happy that you have come, Miss Morrison. You see, we have learned that musical therapy is very beneficial as a means of recovery. Mm. In many instances, our medical knowledge is of little value. Well, if you are ready...
You come too, John, won't you?
Of course, if I can be of help.
Come this way, please. Our piano survived the war, but I'm afraid it's badly out of tune. Here we are. Many of them are seriously wounded as well as blind.
Oh, John, how horrible.
Frau Zimmermann will accompany you. You have your music?
Oh, yes, Doctor, here it is. I'll walk around the room as I sing. You see, Doctor, I'm looking for a certain soldier. In fact, I've been looking now for almost 4 years. Uh-huh. He's listed as missing in action.
What is his name?
McNeil. Major Harry McNeil of the Royal Air Force.
I am sorry, Miss Morrison, but our records do not show.
Yes, I know. I've heard that from London to Berlin. But I'm still looking.
When my dream boat comes home, when my dreams no more will roam, I will meet you.
Judy sang her heart out to those boys, just as she'd done month after month, year after year. She visited every bed, looking, hoping, praying. Many of the patients were swathed in bandages from head to foot. How she ever hoped to identify Harry was beyond understanding. But as she stood there, literally singing with eyes full of tears, she was a picture I'll never forget. The late afternoon sun came streaming into the room and formed an aura of light over her head. She looked like and was an angel of mercy.
Oh, John, my last hope is gone. Take me home, please.
We walked slowly to the door. Her head was bowed.
Judy was crying softly. Just as we reached the door, she stopped. She turned and took a last lingering look round the room. The sun had dipped even lower and shone across the beds of the wounded, making long, grotesque shadows on the wall. And then we walked out through the door. Suddenly, Judy raised her head. Her eyes had a wild, startled look. She grabbed my arm and looked up into my eyes.
John, the ring. I saw it. The ring. His ring. Oh, what a fool.
She turned and ran back into the room. Ran to the bed of a man swathed in bandages from head to foot. Only his hands were showing. And on his finger, I saw the ring. A black onyx stone that caught the last faint shimmer of sunshine. Judy was kneeling at the bed, sobbing as only a desperate love can sob.
I found you, Harry. I found you.
She stood silently by, watched through tear-filled eyes. We saw the hand of our brave and blind Major Harry McNeil close tenderly over hers.
Warren William will be back in just a moment to tell you the rest of the story. Here is a word from your announcer. And here again is Warren William.
Judy and Harry were married the next day, and I had the honor of being present at the bedside ceremony. Harry was invalided back to the States and is now living with Judy on a little farm in Connecticut. Judy, of course, after her long and meritorious service record, is again the toast of Broadway. And Artists Incorporated, in spite of Harry's protests, have elected him a vice president and have his office ready for him as soon as he is able to return. And so, two wonderful young people found out that the theater and love are not only compatible, but necessary for a complete happiness. And Harry's famous will... well, I just added it to my collection of strange wills. Next week, I'm going to tell you a story about a last will that started a treasure hunt on the floor of the ocean for a king's ransom in rubies, diamonds, and pagan gold. The log of the Spanish three-master, Toledo, was washed ashore on a desolate West Indies island through modern science and the skill of a beautiful young forensic chemist. The last position of the ship was discovered. Discovered not only by Captain Paul George, courageous young American, but, unfortunately, by the desperate crew of an ex-German U-boat who had fled Germany at the end of the war. What took place at the bottom of the ocean is a thriller that I promise you won't forget for a long time to come. We call this strange story Treasure to Starboard. This is Warren Williams inviting you to listen again next week.
Strange Wills is written by Ken Crapine and directed by Albert Ulrich. This is a Tellaways feature produced in Hollywood.